Right. Hey, Tammuz, Thursday 29th of June, Rabbi Shimon Heller, Lehodos Ul Hallel.
Okay, I always say good morning, everybody.
Morning.
This year, going back almost an entire year, during the Yom Ne'orim this year, I got a massive, amazing chizuk. It was between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Aseres Yemei Teshuvah. And of course, the Sichas Hayoyim is, of course, Yom Ne'orim. And I met a friend, and I said to him, how did your Rosh Hashanah go? How was your Rosh Hashanah? Which is a bit of a stupid question, because nobody knows how their Rosh Hashanah went. Till next year, Rosh Hashanah, when we know retrospectively, you know how well our Rosh Hashanah went. But I meant to say, how did you feel your Rosh Hashanah went? So he said, actually, I had an amazing Rosh Hashanah. The tefillahs were just amazing. And he said, the reason for this was because of the Baal Tefillah. He said, we had this Baal Tefillah, this is in Kiryat Sefer, who davened with such emotion, and it was just so moving, the tefillah, that he just picked us all up. And I happen to know the Baal Tefillah, he's a chutznik, he's actually English, and he was davening this minyan in Eretz Yisrael, and he said he davened with so much emotion and devotion, he just picked up the whole tefillah, and we were all elated and joined in our tefillahs. And he said at one point he was crying during the tefillah, and at one point he was so choked up with emotions that he put his head down on the shtender, and he cried for 5 minutes straight. And the whole Kehillah cried with him. And I was very moved to hear this, a younger man davening with so much meaning. I know the younger man, he's fighting to pay his rent at the end of the month, and I could imagine how he's davening with Sefer Chaim, Baruch HaVisholem, Parnosa, Toivo, we need Parnosa, we're so desperate. And it's Ke'eved, the Oymid Ifnei Raboi, standing before the Eibishter and begging. And then I said to him, tell me, what part of Tefillah was he so emotional, he just broke down crying? What words was it in the Tefillah? And he said to me, it was Moedim. Moedim. From the whole tefillah on Rosh Hashanah. And they were begging Hashem and everything he's asking for. And he needs so much. I know this younger man. When he came to Moedim, he broke down crying with this amazing emotion and feeling. I was so moved that to really appreciate what Hashem gives us. So I was really moved by this story. And I was telling everybody that I met during those days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I met my neighbor, who's also Darshan. And I said to him, you've got to hear this story, this person. Moedim, he started crying. And he said, I want to tell you an amazing medrash. This is not a well-known medrash. It's brought down in Orchus Yosha by Reb Chaim Knievsky. And he tells over the following medrash. There was this person, he lived in a town. And one day he leaves his home to leave town to go out to work in the field. We'll call him Heschel. And as Heschel is walking out the town, he meets another person, a friend of his, Zundel. Hi, good morning, Zundel. Good morning, Heschel. Where are you going? I'm going out to work. Let's go together. So the two join together, and they walk out of the town together. And as they walk out of the town, out this gate of the gate of the city, there's a poor man, and he's sitting on the floor. And he puts out his hand, Anadova, tzedakah. One of them gave him a coin. The other didn't. So the one that gave a coin said to the other one that didn't, why didn't you give a coin? I just want to point out, though, when we discuss giving a coin to this poor man, today, when we have a poor person and we give him a pound or whatever it may be, although that's an amazing mitzvah, but at the end of the day, in most situations, that pound is not taking bread out of our own mouth. It's in addition to our own parnasa. But in those days, people were very, very poor, and they could barely afford food. And giving a coin to a poor man literally meant, you will be hungry because now he will eat. And your children will not have supper tonight because you gave him a donation. It was a serious nefesh. So one of them gave the poor man a coin, and the other one didn't. So the one that gave a coin said to the other one, why didn't you give him a coin? He said, listen, you maybe know this poor man, maybe you know he's genuine. I don't know him. And since I don't know him, why should I give him money? I know my children are hungry, and I know that my family need this, and therefore why should he take precedence over my own family? And the other one says, fine. And they carry on walking together. It's a medrash. They're walking together, and somebody comes towards them. This somebody was actually the Malach HaMoves, himself. Let's hide come. He was going to take them up to Shemaim. But he's not walking around with his big sign, Malach HaMoves with two horns. He's walking towards them. And as the Malach HaMoves comes towards them, they see him coming and they bump into him in opposite directions. And they say to him, Shalom, how are you? He said, I'm fine. How are you? And they say, we're fine as well. And the Malach HaMoves says, you think you're fine because I haven't yet told you who I am. You know, soon we'll be thinking very differently. And he said, tell me, who are you? And he says, I'm Zundel. And this is my friend Heschel. Who are you? He said, who am I? The Malach HaMoves. Wow. And I'm shaking. No. Yes. You're the last person in this world we want to see. He said, I'm the last person in this world you're going to see because your time has come. The three of you are coming with me up to Shammai. And they're shaking. Rachmanes. And he said, listen, if I had to have Rachmanis, I'd be out of business. I'm taking the tube, you're up there, your time has come, we're going. And they're shaking, and he takes out his big shechita knife. And at that point, he says, one minute, Zundel, you gave a coin to the poor man. Stocker tatsil mimavis, you can go home. And Zundel, like, can't believe his luck. And he starts running in one direction. Heschel goes running in the other. You come back. Hey, you'll stay here. Just he can come home. And the Malach HaMavis says, I'm going to give you extra years. How many years did he give to Zundel? Says the Medrash, 50 years. He was feeling very generous that day. 50 years because he gave a coin to the poor man. So Zundel goes running. And Heschel, right, runs away. Hey, you come back. No, I'm going. Hey, you're staying right here. You are going and come with me now to Shammai. And Heschel starts arguing with the Malach, it's not fair, why are you letting him go and you're leaving me here? So because he gave up coins to the poor man and you didn't, therefore he can go and you're staying. And Heschel says, you know what, give me 5 minutes, I'm going to run to the gate of the city, I'll give him 5 coins to this poor man. He said, no, too late, you know, everyone has their time, you had your chance, there's no running back now, you've missed it, it's too late. And he starts arguing with the Malach, why is this not fair? His wife sent him out to work, my wife sent me out to work. What will my wife feel like? Why is she to blame that I didn't give a coin to the poor man? It's not fair. And the Malach Amar said, listen, I'm used to all these arguments. Time has come, you're going. And he's like, sharpening your shechita knife, and it's about to happen. And Heschel, whichever one it was, realizes that he's lost it, and he's going. And he's got a few seconds left in this world. He turns to the Malach Amar and he says, you know what? Okay, I've lost, I'm going. But I want to ask you one thing. Give me 5 more minutes. Just 5 more minutes. And the Malach HaMavis says, why? And he said, look, you know, Hashem's taking me. Hashem nosan, v'Hashem lokach, yishem Hashem mevoyroch. Hashem gave me my life. He's got every right to take it. As much as I'd love to live, Hashem's got the right to take my life. But just because I'm going to die, doesn't mean that I didn't live. Hashem gave me so much in my life. I was born, I had parents, I had a family, I never went hungry. I had my life. And then after that, I had a family, and I was able to have a wife, and children, and meaning, and parnasa. Hashem has given me so much. How can I leave this world without saying thank you? Give me 5 minutes that I can enumerate all the chasod that Hashem did for me, and just be moida to Hashem. The Malach HaMavis says, heard this. He says, you know what? You're staying. You're not going. If you want to stay in this world to thank Hashem, you are staying right here. And the Medrash finishes, V'nosan lo shonim, and he gave him years. It doesn't say how many. So you'd imagine 2-3 years. So my neighbor, the Starishan, said, no, but I think it's years unlimited. As long as you're going to be moedah to Hashem and thank him, you'll just keep living. As long as it is. It's unlimited. If you want to live to thank Hashem for his chasodim, you're staying right here. The power of Hodah, to thank Hashem, to give Shvach of the amazing things that He has given us. The Gemara tells us there were two tremendous Talmidei Chachamim, Rabba Bar Hona and Rav Hamnona. They were Bali Plukta, they were Chaverim, they were learning together the whole time. When they died, they both died simultaneously at the same time, Rabba Bar Hona and Rav Hamnona. So obviously there was a massive Levaya, they put out the two coffins on two camels, and they were riding them through the desert to bring them to Eretz Yisrael in order to bury them. You have two camels, side by side, and behind them a whole entourage of the Jewish people, and also the camel driver, the Arab. And as they're driving through the midbar, side by side, they reach a deep crevice. The only way to pass is by going to pass this little bridge, a Gesher Tzarmoy, the very narrow bridge, and that's the only way to pass. Says the Gemara, as the two camels come to the bridge, kongamli, they stop and they refuse to budge. And the camel driver's putting the camels, and they won't move. And he gives them a kick from the behind, and it won't move. And he takes a carrot, and it won't move. And the two camels are stuck to their place, and they won't move. And the whole entourage stops, and everything's halted. And everyone's standing, frozen. But these camels refuse to move. And at one point, the camel driver, the Arab that was there, he turns to the Eden, and he says, why have the camels refused to move? And the Eden say, Chachom mu da'ovid yikra ahadodi. Both of these Talmidei Chachamim are showing kavod one to the other. Mar Oma Hailel Bereisha. Rabbi Barfuna is saying to Rabbi Amnon, you go first. Umar Omar Hailel Bereisha. And Rabbi Amnon is saying to Rabbi Barfuna, you go first. And neither one is stepping in front of the other because it's a very narrow bridge and only one can go at a time. And therefore the two camels have stopped because neither camel wants to go in front of the other. And that's why they're not moving. So the Arab camel driver says, in my opinion, Rabbi Baruch Hanna should go first. Yes, Chus Avis, and Arabs like Chus Avis, because of Yishma, Avram. So he said, I think Rabbi Baruch Hanna should go first. Immediately, says the Gemara, Kom Gamle de Rabbi Baruch Hanna. The camel of Rabbi Baruch Hanna goes, and behind it, the camel of Rabbi Hamnona, and the procession continues. However, finishes the Gemara, he did not get away for away with it, this Arab. Nafal kuchi v'shini d'hayutaya. This Arab will lose his teeth. He will be punished for what he did. Ask the Maharsha, why was he punished? He lost his teeth. What did he do wrong? He gave his opinion. They accepted his opinion. And the procession continued. What did he do wrong? Says the Maharsha, you have all these Yidden standing around the camel, and nobody gave their opinions. Jews always have opinions, especially Israeli taxi drivers. Jews have opinions, and everyone's standing there. Why did any Jew open his mouth and give his ideas? The answer is, you're seeing the Eibishter. You're seeing the Koich of Talmidei Chachamim. You're seeing a miracle in front of your eyes. Where are you running to? Why are you going to stand and enjoy and be mushba and see the power of the Eibishter? See the Tzadikim b'misasam, they've got more power than in their lives. They're driving their camels after they're dead. See, enjoy, be nispoiled, be mafnim the nest, take it inside you. Where are you running to? The Arab has got no espilus, careerus. He didn't see what Hashem did. Let's go. So he loses his teeth. He's like the Ben Rashi and the Haggadah. We knock a hack. What is all these things you are doing? So we knock out his teeth. You don't know why we're making a Seder night? You don't realize you want to thank Hashem for the amazing miracles he did? You want to be mischazik in Amunah and be talking the Oidos and the Halal? You don't appreciate that? We knock out his teeth. That means we don't talk to you. Because you don't appreciate the same thing. With this Arab, he loses his teeth. There's no one to talk to because when you see something, you don't appreciate it. And we say to the Ben Rosh and Nagada, Ilu Aisa Shom Lo Yaisa Nigo. And that is the Yisod. If somebody appreciates the Chesed of Hashem, if somebody sees a miracle and says, wow, there will be Zoicha to more miracles, just because they appreciate it, even though they don't deserve. But if somebody has Chesed Hashem, or sees a miracle, or sees Hashem's glory, and does not appreciate it, he will no longer be zoicha to Hashem's goodness, even if he may deserve it. Let's see a few examples of people who did or didn't appreciate miracles. They could be bad or good people, but the result went to the extent of their appreciation. The Gemara tells us, says the Gemara in Tainis, Haruge Lud, Ein Koberia Yochelamoy Bemichitzasam began Eden. Those two people that were killed in Lud, they are so holy, two brothers, that nobody can go near them in a special place in Gan Eden. And the Gemara tells us the story of Pappus and Lulinus. Very bekitzer, the story goes as follows. There was a very powerful king in Lud, and of course he has a daughter, the princess. One day the daughter says to her father, Daddy, I'd love to go for a walk around the royal gardens. And the father says, my daughter, that's why I have royal gardens, for you to enjoy that. Go and enjoy. And the princess goes for a walk around the gardens. And as she's walking between the trees and she's sitting in the garden, her father's waiting for her to come home. And it's getting late, and it's at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. He expected her back already about 8-ish. And when it gets to 10:30, he gets nervous and he tells his servants to go and look for his princess. As the servants are holding these torches, walking through the dark forest, the woods behind the castle, they suddenly jump in horror as they see the body of the princess, her white gown splattered in crimson red blood. They're in horror, they're in shock, they bring her body back to the king. This was your daughter. The king's like mortified. Hagam lichvoish es amalko imi bebais. Somebody killed my daughter in my own home. How can anyone dare do that? Who dared kill my own daughter? He's broken, he's crying, and he's furious. He calls a cabinet meeting, he calls all his main ministers, his officers, and he says, I want you to find that murderer, and I will punish this guy. I will torture him. I want the person responsible for this murder. At that point, stood up one of his ministers by the name of Turinus. And he says, Your Highness, we don't have to look for the murderer. We know exactly who is responsible. You know who murdered my daughter? No. I thought you just said, you know who's responsible. He said, I know who's responsible. I don't know which person, but I know which terrorist group it is. There's a certain terrorist group. They are ruthless. They're even worse than ISIS. Ever since Churban Bayis Sheni, they're killing and they're slaughtering. And that, of course, he says, is the Jews. They are for sure responsible. I don't know which Jew it was. You get the rabbi, you'll find out who it was. So the king goes and he gets summons the Rav of the Jewish people of Lud. And the Rav just walks into the royal throne room and the king is burning and his eyes are on fire. And he says, you better give me the murderer of my daughter, otherwise I will kill every man, woman, and child in the entire Lud. And the Rav says, but your highness, no, but I want the murderer. But your highness, I'm trying. No, but the murderer. Your highness, nothing out of it. Within 3 days, I want the murderer or you're all dead. And unfortunately, this is another blood libel. And the Jews are crying and screaming and doing Tanisim and davening. But there's no salvation 3 days later. And at this point, Pappas and Olinus realize they are two brothers, very holy people. They could have run away themselves. They realize that unless they're going to give up their lives, everyone's going to be killed. So they come to Tyrannus and they say, Tyrannus, we are innocent. We would never kill the king's daughter. But since you've made this terrible libel against us, we will take responsibility to save the king's daughter. We hand ourselves over as the murderers. Tyrannus turns to them and he says, if you are really as innocent as you claim to be, let your God make a miracle for you, like he made for Hashnanya, Mishael, and Azariah when he saved them from the fires of Nebuchadnezzar. About 400 years earlier, four mighty empires before the Roman Empire. We have the incredible story brought down in Sefer Daniel, Perek Gimel, of the six amazing miracles that happened with Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah when Nebuchadnezzar threw them into a fire. Mm. Pappas and Olinus happened to be their descendants. And they said, if you are really as innocent as you claim to be, let your God make a miracle for you as he did for your ancestors, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. And Pappas and Olinus said, no, that will not happen despite our innocence. Number one, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were tzaddikim gemurim. We are not tzaddikim gemurim on their level, although we are innocent of this crime. And number two, Nebuchadnezzar was a melech hogun. He was a worthy king. And therefore he merited to be able to see and witness incredible miracles. But you, Tyrannus, are not worthy. And therefore you won't be able to see such a miracle. And indeed they were killed, and after that Tyrannus is killed. There's one thing I don't understand in this story. Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were perfect tzaddikim, and we, Pappas and Olinus, are not on that level of tzaddikim. I understand that. But what do they mean when they say Nebuchadnezzar was a melech hogun? You are not a melech hogun. Tyrannus is definitely not a melech hogun, but neither is Nebuchadnezzar. He is one of the world's greatest butchers of world history. Nebuchadnezzar is responsible for the destruction of our Beis Hamikdash, in addition to the murder of millions of Jewish innocent people. He is a melech hogun. If he's hogun, then what is someone who's not hogun? Nebuchadnezzar, melech hogun? What did they mean when they say Nebuchadnezzar is a melech hogun? Therefore, he was zoicha to appreciate miracles unlike you. I saw brought down the Mefarshim. Nebuchadnezzar is a terribly evil person. He destroyed our Beis HaMikdash. But that doesn't take away that he had one mila, and he has this mila. When Nebuchadnezzar sees a miracle, and he sees Yad Hashem, he is nispoiled. He says, wow, Hashem. When Daniel would tell him his own dream that he dreamt, which he knew is a power, me'al-tv, and he was a supernatural power. It was a godly power within Daniel. When Daniel will tell him his own dream, he will bow down on the floor in front of Daniel. The mighty king will prostrate himself in front of Daniel and say, you are amazing. He will want to be machtik turis to Daniel. Daniel will say, I'm not God, I'm a servant of God. And Nebuchadnezzar says, I mean the God that you represent. When Nebuchadnezzar will see the fires of Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, he will be so nispoiled. He will send letters to all provinces, to all people living under his reign, and he will say the most incredible letters. He will say the miracles, the wonders that the God of the Jews did to the Jewish people. Osiah of Simhaya, the God of the Jews, there's no one like him in all the gods of all my provinces. And anyone who dares speak against him, says Nebuchadnezzar, as he is mefaris in the nest, and he publicly decries Hashem's amazing powers. He will sing shirs for Sishbochais that almost outdid those of David ben Yishai. When Nebuchadnezzar sees a miracle, he appreciates it. He says, wow, Hashem, you're amazing, as evil as he is. He appreciates miracles. He can see miracles. Unlike Tyrannus, who won't appreciate what he sees. In contrast, Chizkiyahu HaMelech, the greatest tzaddik almost ever to have reigned on the royal throne, the Gemara, the Novi says, there was never anyone like him, not before and not after. Such a perfect tzaddik. Dovuk Hashem, says the Novi. He was attached to Hashem, Chizkiyahu. The Mefarshim are done when we say there was no one like him, is that including or excluding David HaMelech, ad kedekach. Dovuk Hashem, tzaddik yisoid olam, Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He was attacked by Sancheriv, who comes with 185,000 armies. He comes with people, Kochoyla Shal Svas Hayom Leroy, with millions of soldiers as they surround Yerushalayim. Chizkiyahu's chances of salvation are slightly less than zero. There he is surrounded, and Chazal say that was Ke'en Goig Umagoig. That will be what will happen at the end of days, and Mechemes Goig Umagoig, one will be surrounded in the most impossible battle. But this happened to Chizkiyahu. And it was on the Leil Seder night. And that night he's singing to Hashem, and he's been mechazik, and he's amun, and he's bitoch, and he's going through the Leil Seder night. And that night we have the most incredible miracle. The Malach Gavriel comes from Shemayim, and he kills out all these armies. Almost everybody's dead. And we have the most amazing salvation. Sechazal Chizkiyahu was supposed to be Mashiach. His greatness and that salvation could have been a kiyum of Gog and Magog and Bias HaMashiach. Why was he not Mashiach? Because he didn't sing a Shira after this miracle. So Nebuchadnezzar, the most evil of people, can experience the greatest miracles because he appreciates miracles. In contrast, Chizkiyahu and Cholila, I'm not saying that he didn't appreciate miracles. It was a duck min a duck, and he's far greater than Nebuchadnezzar, even on this Nekuda, Cholila. But he didn't 1,000,000% appreciate miracles despite his tzidkis, so he can't be the one to bring the greatest miracles of the world and be Melech HaMashiach, because he didn't 1,000,000% appreciate miracles. The Gemara tells us, Gittin Nun Vav Amud Aleph, Nero and Kesar comes to conquer Yerushalayim. He comes to conquer the holy city, but he knows it's a holy city, and he's scared. Will he really be able to conquer the city of God? So he's a very powerful Roman Caesar. And as he comes to the city, he decides to do an omen, a test. He has a bow and arrow, and he shoots an arrow to the right. And the arrow will turn by itself and land in the city of Yerushalayim. He then shoots an arrow to the left, and the arrow will turn itself and land in the city of Yerushalayim. He's like amazed. He'll turn backwards and shoot an arrow in the opposite direction. The arrow will turn itself and land in Yerushalayim. He'll then shoot an arrow in the direction of Yerushalayim, but he wasn't directly in line with the city, and also the distance was too far for the arrow to reach, and the arrow continued, and it landed in Yerushalayim. He got a very clear message. He's going to conquer the city. He walks up to the city, grabs the first little cheder kid, and he said, "Tell me, my child, what did you learn in cheder today?" And the kid said, "I learned the pasuk, V'nakamti es nikmasi be'edoim ba'ad ami Yisrael. I will take Nakom against Edom, what they did to my nation, Bnei Israel. They will succeed. They'll destroy the city, but I will pay them back to Hashem." Says Niran Kesar, "Hashem, if I win this war, do I have any doubt in my mind who gave me the strength to win this war? Do I have any doubt where I got the power? Hashem, this is clearly you. I shot an arrow to the right, it landed in Yerushalayim. I shot an arrow to the left, it landed backwards, it went into Yerushalayim. Hashem, this is you. And you're telling me that you'll be angry and you will punish those that will go against the city. Hashem, I'm not doing this. Why would I want to work against you if you're so powerful?" Nero and Kesar, the mighty king, will take off his crown. He will abduct him. He will run away, rather, from his own army. And he will join the Jewish people. He'll become a Ger Tzedek. Despite the fact that we're minutes before the Churban, it's like becoming a convert just before the Holocaust. He will convert and join the Jewish people, Nero and Kesar. And he will grandfather of the greatest of the Talmidei Reb Akiva, Reb Meir. Stam Mishnah Reb Meir, that is a grandson of Nero and Kesar. But what is special about Reb Meir? He's different from all the Tanoim. He has a special title, Reb Meir Baal Hanes. He is Melumad Benisim. The Gemara tells stories and stories. If there was a miracle maker, if there was a Baal Moisim, it was Remeir Baal. And the Gemara, we haven't got time, all the stories in the Remeir Baal. Why was he such an amazing child who was Dafka Meyuchad in his miraculous powers? Because he appreciated miracles. Nero and Kesar sings and sees a miracle and he's this spa, wow! And he acts upon it. You appreciate miracles, you get miracles. In contrast, one daf later in the Gemara, Gittin Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, the Gemara tells us of a city called Tur Malka. Tur Malka was surrounded by the Romans, but there was one person who was very, very strong. It's called the Bar Doraima. And the Bar Doraima could jump a mile. He was extremely powerful. And he was standing on the walls of the city. And he would jump and catch all the missiles, all the stones that the Romans would catapult in the city. He would catch them and return them to the owners. So he's jumping across the walls of the city, catching these stones and returning them. And he's holding at bay the entire Roman army. And the Roman king at the time is like really embarrassed because he's supposed to be the world's superpower. And one man is holding his entire army at bay. So he davens to Hashem, the Roman emperor. And he says, "Hashem, don't give me into the hands of one man. This is so embarrassing. He who's going to fight Am Hashem is davening to Hashem." At the same time, the Bar Doraima also spoke to Hashem. And he said the stupidest thing anyone could ever say. And he basically said, "Hashem, you're not helping them. I'm doing the job. Just don't disturb." What a stupid thing to say. Hashem said, "I'm not doing it. You're saving the nation." The next day, the Bar Doraima goes to the field to be excused. A snake comes and it bites him and he's gone. He's dead. The city is now vulnerable. The city is open. The enemy can come and do a slaughter, a pogrom. The Roman king sees this, and he says, "You know what? I know that God made me a miracle. I will not destroy the Jewish people this time." He turns around with his army, and he travels away. The Jewish people see that the Roman army has left, and they go into a complete, they're excited, they feel so good with themselves, the Roman army has left us. And that night they make parties, and they make massive bonfires, and they say, the Romans are scared of us, the Romans are scared of us, look, they don't even want to attack us, they've turned away, the Romans are scared of us, and they're singing and dancing. The Romans are already miles away, and that night as they encamp, they can hear the screeching from the city. They can see the fires, and someone says to the Roman king, the Jews are making fun of us. Look, kochodi bon Yehudoi. The Roman minister king says, they're making fun of me? They think that I'm scared of them? I'll teach them a lesson. He turns around, he comes back to the city. And this is one of the most horrible parts of Jewish history. There'll be a massacre for 3 days and three nights. This was a metropolis of Jewish life. Chazal say on one part of the city, people are still dancing chasanahs. They didn't even realize that the slaughter had started. Everyone was entrapped. This is a bloodbath. This is a holocaust. I never understood, like, Hashem is the one who orchestrates all events. Hashem saved us and then destroyed us. And Hashem, if you wanted to destroy us, why didn't the king destroy us immediately? And if he didn't want to destroy us, why did he come back? Today, so once again brought down in the Mephoshim. Hashem made us a miracle. Hashem put in the mind of the king not to attack us. That's a miracle. And he turned away after years of siege. What do we say? He's scared of us. Where was the Oz Yashiv? Where was the Sudas Vidor? Where was the Shechion? Where was Lahoides Hashem? Hashem said, I made a miracle and you didn't appreciate it. Goodbye, miracle. We lost it. He came back. He destroyed us all. Bit of British European history. Terrible bubonic plague, the Black Death, just rolled through Europe. A third of Europe was destroyed by this terrible plague. Amazingly, the Jewish people were far less affected, far less than the non-Jewish people during the plagues. The reason was, as we learned in history, because Jewish people are much more hygienic. They wash their hands before we eat, when we come out of the bathroom, and due to the hygiene, they were less affected. After the plague is finished, and there's so much searing anger amongst the goyim, and they've got to like let themselves out, they throw the blame on the Jewish people. How come we died and they didn't? And therefore they say it must be that they poisoned our wells. And now we have terrible massacres throughout Europe. Terrible massacres. Entire communities were wiped out at the massacres after the terrible Black Death. We suffered in a terrible way. I saw brought down in the Sefer Lahagid, the Shem the Gedoli Yisrael. What really happened here? There was a bubonic plague and the Jews were saved. Why were we saved? History tells us because we wash our hands. That is such baloney. If you have a bubonic plague, washing your hands is not going to save you. Certainly not in Europe of then, where there was no flowing water, no normal bathroom. That's impossible. Do you know why we were saved? Because Hashem had Rachmanis on his nation. Because Hashem did us a miracle. Why isn't this part of Jewish history? The miracle Hashem did, a bubonic plague flying straight through Europe, and the Jewish people are unaffected. Why isn't this part of our history, the miracles that Hashem did for us? No, we wash our hands. It all makes sense. We've worked it all out in a scientific way. Hashem said, I made you a miracle, but you didn't appreciate the miracle. And therefore, goodbye miracle. We lost it. And all those that were saved, and many more, were destroyed straight after. If you appreciate miracles, you get it. If you appreciate Chesed Hashem, you get it. If you don't, you lose it. And so this person, who wanted to thank Hashem for his life, was given years and years of additional life. Rabbi Barfan and Rabbi Nuna can do such amazing things, but if the Arab doesn't appreciate it, he loses his teeth like the Ben Rasha. Because if you don't appreciate miracles, you don't get them. Nebuchadnezzar appreciates miracles. Therefore, we witnessed the most amazing miracle. He saw 600,000 people coming to life. Tchias amazing. And Bikas Dura Nebuchadnezzar. He saw the most amazing miracle because he appreciated them. In contrast to Chizkiyah, I'm not contrasting Cholil at Tzadik Yisrael, but he didn't immediately appreciate, so he lost it. Tur Malka, in contrast to Niran Kesar. Niran Kesar appreciated, he got it. Tur Malka didn't, they lost it. The bubonic plague, the Black Death. Israeli history, and with this we'll finish, the Six-Day War. Before the Six-Day War, everyone was shaking with fright. Everyone knew they've lost. There's not a way you can stand up. A tiny country surrounded by such enemies. There's no way you can stand up to this attack. The second the Six-Day War was over, up went the Israeli flag. Anyone who mentioned God was considered blasphemy. There were no miracles. I've got this right up. Mizrahi person wrote, the incredible miracles of the Six-Day War. We know the Israelis preempted an airstrike. They blew up all the enemy airfields, Syria, Egypt, at the first 6 hours of war. And basically, that was already the victory. You think the enemies didn't have anti-aircraft missiles? You think they weren't ready to hit down the Israeli planes? There's all this information. I don't have time to read it out. One thing he says, that just as the war was about to begin, the second in command of the Egyptian army had to fly across the Sinai Peninsula to an airbase in Bir Tamda. He was scared that his own people would shoot down his own plane, being that they would think he's the enemy. He therefore said, during these 2 hours, it's me flying across the Sinai Peninsula. If you see army planes, don't shoot. Mordechai Hod, the head of the Israeli army, who knew nothing of this, in those exact 2 hours, sent his planes over the Sinai Peninsula to go and attack the enemy airfields. He was seen by their anti-aircraft missiles. They were saved. They could have been shot down in seconds. Miraculously, they were saved. He didn't even realize the miracle that happened then, as well as many others. But it wasn't appreciated, as we all know. And after that came in its wake, the Yom Kippur War. The more we appreciate Hashem, the more we see Chesed Hashem, the more we're moida. This week, Parashah, the Shira. Every time we see a Chesed Hashem, if we sing a Shira, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll be zeicha to more and more chasadim, we'll be zeicha be'ezus Hashem.